Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us on Trumpet Radio Live 101.3. We're KPCG. We are online. We're at kpcg.fm. Live link at thetrumpet.com. Here's what's coming up on this Tuesday edition. A plane crash kills a good portion of a Brazilian soccer team. Pretty tragic event. We'll talk about that. There's wildfires going on in the Smoky Mountains. Pretty serious situation there. And more updates about what happened yesterday at Ohio State. Tragedy there. So that and a lot more coming your way this edition of Trumpet Radio Live 101.3 KPCG.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live. We're at 101.3 KPCG, and we're online at kpcg.fm. There's a live link at thetrumpet.com. You can also listen on the TuneIn app, which is a nice app to use on your smart device. And if you'd like to follow us on Twitter, please do that, at kpcgfm. And we also like your emails. You can send those to us, comments at kpcg.fm, and we will read them and bind them in leather. And save them forever on a shelf. Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon with you here today. How's it going, Grant?
It's great.
Yeah.
Always great.
We were just talking about how we like Tuesdays. Tuesdays, I don't know. I like Tuesday. I like the way the day goes. And not that I don't like Wednesday. Wednesday, if you're listening, I like you too.
Don't get too upset Monday either.
Well, who likes Mondays though, right?
Yeah, poor Monday.
When I was a kid, for about a week, I was in fourth grade, and I thought it'd be a good idea to have a journal. And write down things. But, you know, I don't know. I just didn't know what to write down, so I quit pretty early. But I did it for a while, and it was funny because I do remember one journal entry where I wrote before I went to school, I said, I hate Mondays. Mondays are the worst days. And I didn't elaborate. I just said that. And then I came home, and I must have had a good day because I wrote, Mondays are the best days. Depends on what happens on Monday.
It really does. Sometimes a nice little treat on Monday can change everything.
Packers won on Monday Night Football.
Oh, they did. That's great.
So for me, that was a huge thing. I forgot what it was like to win. And I thought, yeah, this is a good feeling.
I'm surprised they beat the Eagles. That's pretty impressive. On the road, too, right?
Yeah, the Eagles Eagles have been playing well. They got that rookie quarterback Wentz from, North Dakota, I think? Somewhere up there.
Some weird place.
Like, no offense, obscure. North Dakota. It was a smaller school, but he's been a good quarterback so far. So anyway, good job, Packers. Proud of you if you're listening. Good job, Aaron Rodgers.
He's definitely listening.
Definitely, he always listens. Other news, kind of sports related. This one's a tragic situation. 75 are killed. Six survive a crash of a charter plane carrying Brazilian soccer team in Colombia. This is breaking news today. They say an official investigation has begun into a plane crash that killed 75 people, including members of a Brazilian soccer club, near Jose Maria Cordova International Airport in Medellin, Colombia, just before 10 p.m. And that was Monday evening, so last few hours here. Colombian authorities confirmed six survivors, three soccer players, two crew members, and one journalist. The plane, charter flight CP-2933, operated by Lamia Airline, was due to arrive in Medellin from Bolivia. The airport's official Twitter account confirmed, adding the plane suffered an electrical failure before the crash, and so it wiped out a good number of the players in that team. Tragic event. We've had some of that here in Oklahoma over the years. OSU, one of, I forget which team it was, but one of their teams was basketball, I think, was pretty much knocked out in a plane crash.
I believe the Marshall football team years ago had the same fate.
Yeah. And so thankfully it doesn't happen often, but sometimes it does. And they do charter flights all the time. These teams are always flying. You think about an NBA team, you know, when they go on a road trip, they're probably flying 3-4 times a week. And, you know, we all fly occasionally, and you usually get there, and they have a pretty good rate of getting there successfully. But, you know, every time you get up in the sky, it probably crosses your mind that, you know, if something went wrong, we would have problems. They're so far up there.
That's true. And I saw on this story specifically, they had their own special plane just for the team. And at the last second, they changed onto this other flight that had other people on it.
Mm.
So it was the soccer team's delegation of players and coaches and reporters and everything else that was supposed to have its own plane, and they switched at the last second. So
wow.
That really seems like it could have been avoided at least.
Wow. Yeah, that anytime there's a tragic event, there's always people on both sides of that, you know, where it's like, oh, they got on the wrong flight and they died. Or, hey, I got delayed, I missed my flight and it crashed. There's always people on either side of that. And it's got to be such a strange feeling, especially, say, for the survivors, you know, where you think, wow, how come I didn't get on that?
There were several injured guys on the team who did not travel with the team for the championship game. And so they were just sitting in the locker room, and there were pictures of them just dazed, just sitting there.
That's their family.
Yeah.
When you're with a team all the time, they're like your family members. Yeah. So tragedy there can happen. Those accidents can occur. They're still investigating.
They must wonder why they lived and the others didn't.
You know?
There must be some level of guilt there where they think, you know, why them instead of me? And, you know, what can I now do to make up for the fact that I'm still alive?
Yeah, you hear about that oftentimes in war. You know, where people wonder, why did I survive and my buddies didn't? Accidents, that could be the same. You know, I tell you, there was an amazing story I saw on the news last night of survival. There was this car here in the U.S., I forget which state it was, and it got hit by a semi-truck, just absolutely obliterated. And there was a baby in the back, several months old, thrown from the vehicle, 30 feet, ended up in a storm drain. Completely fine. The firefighters and the first responders went over there, shone the light down in there, and they said the baby was just sitting there with his hands up, like, pick me up. And, you know, the guy that found the child, he was choking back tears, but he was just saying, you know, usually it's not good when we come out. We usually don't find something good. So when you actually find somebody survived, like a baby, it's an amazing feeling.
Yeah, the baby's actually surprisingly, in a lot of those crashes, they would actually have a better chance of living because they don't even know to tense up their muscles right before the impact. And so they're just completely flying through the air, just oblivious to the fact that they're in grave danger. And if maybe the baby flexed all its muscles before landing, it could have damaged it a lot more.
That could be. They never explained on the story how it ended up in the storm drain. Like, that's
how did it land there?
Sometimes exactly. With news, I just, they tell you all this information, but it seems like they're missing a couple of, I'm like, yeah, but how did the baby get in the storm drain? Like, I get that it flew out of the car, but how did it get in there?
It would be nice sometimes if they would at least acknowledge the fact that everyone's wondering how it got in the storm drain. Just say, we don't know how it got in the storm drain.
Yeah.
We know you're wondering, but we don't have the information about that.
Yeah, I'd appreciate that because I feel like, like there's a big juicy nugget of information there that I'm missing.
It's like, do they seriously think that that's an irrelevant part of the story?
Right.
That's the one thing everyone cares about.
Yeah, it was really. But good news in that front, at least. And it reminded me of when a bus driver, actually, that I had as a kid who'd gotten into two accidents, not with the bus, thankfully, but just with their own vehicle. I think they were hit in both cases. I don't think it was their fault. But two severe accidents, and they survived them. And in both cases, well, one case they survived because they had their belt on. The other case they survived because they didn't.
Oof.
And so not that we would ever, you know, recommend you don't wear a seatbelt, of course. I always wear mine. But it's just weird how those things can happen because in the one case they didn't have their belt on and they were thrown clear of the vehicle. And otherwise they would have had, you know, they probably would have died. And then, of course, in the other case, the seatbelt saved them. In most cases, a seatbelt will save you. But it is just interesting how it can go different ways because I think with this baby, I think they said they weren't really strapped in like they should have been, and that's probably why it survived.
Oh.
So, I mean, again, you never want to like break the rules on that because most times that was what will keep you safe, but it is just, it's just one of those things where sometimes it works out and sometimes it doesn't. It's funny.
Yeah, at least avoid the ticket by having the seatbelt on, even if maybe there are some instances where that might not save a life. That's where a lot of doubt can creep in about the entire rule of having a seatbelt when you hear of these people who'd only survived because they didn't have it on. I've actually had some passengers in the car say, well, I saw a story where someone died for having a seatbelt on. I'm like, yeah, well, you're going to get me fined, so maybe you should just put it on.
Put it on. Well, yeah, if you can avoid the accident, avoid it, obviously. But yeah, sometimes
I've actually never been in a crash except for the deer hitting me.
Right.
When I was really young, I was involved in a lot of crashes, but obviously it wasn't my fault. I wasn't driving. And I wasn't being that distracting, I don't think.
You were being too cute in the back. Look at that baby. Oh, look out.
Yeah, we used to live right on this neighborhood right next to this really, really, really busy intersection. And so there was never even an opening to get through. And it was a four-lane road. So, yeah, we had a couple problems there.
I'm one of those drivers that I take the path of least resistance. Like, even if I want to turn left across traffic, but there's no way, I'll just turn right and I'll swing around.
Yeah.
But whatever. I mean, people have different ways of doing it, but sometimes you get behind that person. They're like, nope, I'm going. And they got to cross all this traffic to go left. And you're just looking like, how is this going to? And then usually they have to gun it at some point. I figure, why not just go right and just swing around the block or go to the light or something?
That's probably saved me several crashes because it's not worth trying to go left and not possibly see a car in the far left lane. That's actually one of the reasons we got in a crash once. And I guess it does mean you have to get ready early enough and kind of be on time for wherever you're going so you have the chance to turn right.
Yeah, I had a car, my first car ever had, which was a good, faithful car, but it had its quirks because it was old, and I kind of knew how to keep it going, but it had a leak in the transmission fluid. So I could always tell when it was getting low because you step on the gas and it would take a second before it did anything. So that transmission fluid. But that always meant that I had to be very careful. You didn't want to have to gun it because it might not be there. You hit the gas and it's like the cartoons where you got to run for about a minute before you go anywhere. It was kind of like that. So I always had to be more careful because sometimes you step on the gas and it's just not there. And so the old car taught me a few lessons as well.
Never try to gun it. That's actually really a safety building or a safety help. I don't even know what you'd call it.
It gets you in the habit.
Safety tip.
Yeah. Get you in the habit of just being a little safer. Ohio State yesterday, of course, more information came out about that horrific event. And the police officers being hailed. It says Ohio State police officer hailed hero for quick reaction to campus attacker. An Ohio State police officer was being hailed a hero for his quick reaction after killing a man a minute after he drove his car into a crowd and then stabbed multiple people Monday. All indications are that was a very intentional act on the part of the attacker. Officer Alan Horajuko, who had only joined the department in January 2015, was responding to reports of a nearby gas leak when the suspect jumped a curb on campus and then plowed into people and started stabbing him. So he shot the man and killed him. And what's just always interesting about this is here's a case where you have an officer with a weapon. He uses it. He uses deadly force. And he saved people's lives because of it. Now, this is so clear-cut that I don't think anyone would say anything about it because it's such a clear-cut situation of you need to stop this person. But they're not always that clear-cut. They can be a little dicey sometimes in terms of how violent is this person? What are they going to do? I've told them to stop. They don't stop. Officers face that all the time. And so, you know, it's just so interesting to see this example and then think of it in light of all the heat the police have taken for using deadly force where, you know, and then people second guess them all the time. Well, they face things like this, though. And it's not always this clear cut. So cut them some slack, right?
Well, there was that one weekend recently where I believe a black man was shot dead by the police, but at the same time, a terrorist in New York was only shot in the leg or something like that, and a lot of people were upset that the terrorist received a better fate. What about this time? The terrorist got shot dead, as he probably should have been, or else he could have kept rampaging. And there's really the problem is whenever we take away all trust from the police and we don't believe that they'll make the right judgment call anymore, then anything that's not as clear-cut as this, someone's going to question. I even was wondering last night, who's going to come forward and say that this police officer was unjust in shooting this terrorist dead?
That would be an interesting argument to make. But again, even with the attack itself, the attacker used a vehicle and he used a knife.
Mm-hmm. No gun.
No guns. So it's just a lot of times the focus is on guns and getting rid of guns and so forth. There's a lot of thoughts on that. But the thing is, if somebody has it in their mind to attack, they're going to do it. What are the most deadly attacks in the country? Airplanes. And not that this ended up being super deadly, but it could have been. They used this in, was it France? Where they drove the truck in and they ran people over and so forth. So if somebody has it in their mind to commit atrocities, they're going to do it. And aren't we all thankful today? Aren't those people that were being attacked thankful that there was an officer there with a gun mm-hmm. to take care of the problem? You know, so it's good to just remember there's a lot of sides to some of those arguments as far as guns and that situation. And this is an example of where the gun actually saved, and the responsible use of it by an officer saved a lot of lives, I think.
Yeah, I've actually heard this explained down to an even smaller level where the guy was saying, you know, the brain is the one committing the crime. It's if someone punches somebody else, it's not the fist that you need to take care of. It's the person's mind who gave the thought to the fist to make the punch. That's really what's at fault. And in these situations where someone has a mind poisoned by a radical ideology, for example, the mind needs to be changed. You can take away all the weapons and he'll still have his limbs to hit you with. I mean, there's always going to be something that he'll be able to find to use against you if his mind is still directed that way.
That's a really good point. Yeah, you don't hear a lot of talk about that, I guess.
We don't talk a lot about mind control.
No.
Or which I guess I think that's happening in a different way, in a
right.
bad way, not a good way.
Not a positive sort of, you know, educational way. On to much, much better news. Russell Westbrook, our favorite Thunder player, is now officially averaging a triple-double. For those who don't follow basketball much, that just means 10 or more in three statistical categories, usually rebounding, assist, and points, though you could get it in blocks, which would be pretty rare, though. That it has happened, but that it would be pretty rare to have 10 blocks, unless they were playing against us, and they would have 10 blocks on every play. The Oklahoma City Thunder superstar, who had already posted 7 triple-doubles through the first 18 games of this year, came into Madison Square Garden last night playing the Knicks, averaging 31.2 points, 9.9 rebounds, and 11.1 assists per contest. So he just needed a few more rebounds to get his average up. He got that last night.
18 rebounds.
18. And I'll tell you what, if you go watch some of the highlights, tremendous rebounds.
He was taking them from four people on the other team.
There was one rebound and where he went up and he got it from, like you said, multiple players. And they were all standing there waiting for the ball, and all of a sudden it's like, it's a bird, it's a plane, it's Westbrook.
He comes flying in there from half court and he grabs it.
Pulling those
it's
rebounds
amazing.
Down. And so he had a really good game last night. The Thunder won. We're happy about that. Sorry, Knicks fans. And you might be thinking to yourself, when's the last time somebody averaged a triple-double? It's only happened once. 1961-62 season, Oscar Robertson became the only player in NBA history to average a triple-double for an entire season, 30.8 points, 12.5 rebounds, 11.4 assists.
Wow. It also needs to be mentioned, he has two of the fastest triple-doubles ever. He got that triple-double last night before halftime, and he's done that before another time. And I believe the only person who's ever done it faster did it back in the 60s, early 60s.
He's playing very well. Now, the critic would say, look at his usage rate. I mean, he has the ball a lot. Fair enough, whatever. But it's still amazing. It's an amazing feat. And I saw a headline yesterday. Now, the journalists always want to jump to extremes. But they said he's the best rebounding guard ever. Well, maybe. Who knows? But he's an extremely good one. One of the best ever, for sure. And he's not real tall. I mean, he's about 6'2", 6'3". And he just gets off the floor, though.
Right.
And he's just a dynamo of energy. And so it's fun to watch him. I hope he keeps it up. I hope he does. I hope he gets a triple-double the whole season.
Yeah, and the thing about usage rate, that has nothing to do with rebounds. The fact that he has the ball a lot has nothing to do with rebounds, because usually the ball's not in his hands when he goes up and grabs the rebound from somebody else. That's more about effort. He's only 6'3", and he's taking it from everybody else. And even if you compare him to other point guards who had the ball the whole game, they're not averaging as many assists as he is, except for maybe one guy. I think maybe James Harden has more, and that might be it.
He's playing very well, so it's a lot of fun to watch, and hopefully he can continue this record-breaking pace, and they can keep winning as well. You know, it's interesting when you look at sports stories and statistics. They've taken the statistics to such a weird level now that I think they've lost 99% of the readership You know, sometimes you look at an article on ESPN or some other website, and I'm like, what are you talking about? And you gotta have a PhD in mathematics to figure out their, you know, I'm like, so how many points does he get, though? And they're like, well, you know, usage rate and all these other things. Like, even in baseball, they have some abbreviations for stats. I don't even know what they mean now. Right. I used to follow it. I used to know all of it, have the baseball cards in the back and everything. But now I don't know what half of it means.
Yeah, I'm trying to get caught up. There's like WHIP, which is walks plus hits per inning pitched, and then BABIP, which is batting average on balls in play, so anytime he doesn't strike out. Man, I'm just trying to get caught up. They have so many of these different stats that they've kind of alienated me. I don't even get into that too much. I prefer the eye test when I'm watching a game. I can tell if a guy's good by the way he's playing. I can just watch him and not have to know every little detail about his statistics.
It's the money ball thing that the Oakland A's did, and they made that movie on Moneyball, where, you know, they have advanced statisticians. So some teams got rid of the scouts that could just look at a player and kind of judge him off of that, and they got the statisticians. Mm-hmm. And in some cases, it might have worked to some extent, but there's a big debate about that.
Yeah.
Do you get the old school guy who says, I can tell this is a player? Or do you get the guy who's just sitting there crunching numbers? Who's more accurate in their assessment of a player?
Teams probably need a good mix of both, because a lot of the time a guy can have a season that's off the charts in terms of all these newfangled stats that they've come up with. But if you try to use the eye test on him, you wonder, well, is this actually sustainable? Could he do this next year based on his technique, based on the way he does things, the fundamentals? And a lot of the time the answer is no, and the guy who's using the eye test could differentiate that.
Right, because they always have that expression like, well, he does a lot of things that don't show up in the box score. Like if you play basketball, you'll have that guy sometimes who he makes all the little hustle plays, he helps on defense, he does all these things that really helps your team. He sets a good screen, but it doesn't show up. How are you going to measure that? Like, oh, he had 5 screens that resulted in the pass, that resulted in the assist, that resulted in the basket. You know, maybe that's why they're coming up with all these new stats to try to calculate that.
They're trying to keep up with all these different things that are impacting the game that really shouldn't be in the stat sheet. We don't need stats for every single thing. I think it's I try not to pay too much attention to it, but maybe in a way, adding all these new statistics into these different articles and into this analysis of the games might bring in a new audience. Maybe it brings in the more intellectual audience that wouldn't like sports otherwise.
That could be. Bunch of guys sitting around talking about the WHIP. What's that man's WHIP percentage?
That's crazy.
What now? I just don't find that quite as interesting. And again, I think you can just kind of look at a guy and say, hey, that guy really is helpful to the team.
Yeah.
A guy like a Dennis Rodman back in the day. Didn't score, but he rebounded, he played defense, he changed his hair color every game. Things that you need on your team.
Right. And the thing is, people can use statistics to try and say Russell Westbrook is actually harmful to his team, which it's hard to see that, except for maybe occasionally at the end of the game if he takes a bad shot to try and win the game. But other than that, I mean, they'll look at his shooting percentage and say it's only a little bit above 40% that he's making his shots. Yeah, look at the impact he's having on the game. I mean, he could easily have 10 more assists a game if guys would finish the shot after he passes it to them.
Well, and that's even hard to – it's really hard to judge all that, because even if it's a missed shot, does it result often in a putback? Like, I mean, there's a lot of ways you could look at it.
A lot of his do. He'll miss the layup, but he's got 3 guys guarding him, and that's the whole point. All those 3 guys jump out of bounds to try and block his shot.
Sure.
And there's no one underneath the basket to block out the next guy who gets it.
Right. Yeah, you can. There's a lot of ways you could try to develop a statistical category to figure it out, but then you just end up, I don't know. Then it feels like homework.
Yeah.
I don't want to do homework. I just want to watch sports and play them.
There has to be a balance there between knowing the statistics and just using the eye test. As a fan, I would just only use the eye test. I don't even care about the stats hardly at all, but I could see why if you're managing a team, you might need to use the stats more.
Yeah. I guess they probably do it so they can explain away why they lose. Well, clearly, if you look at the WHIP percentage.
If it had been better like last year, we would have made the playoffs.
Yeah. Interesting, all the statistics. Speaking of statistics, counting is a basic way to come up with a statistic. And we're having a hard time counting, I guess, in this country as far as the vote and the election is concerned. This is from the Wall Street Journal. The recount Hail Mary, of course, Hail Mary, and in sports is that heave at the end to try to win it against all odds. The left may get an unexpected lesson in electoral federalism. It says, remember when Democrats and the left scored Donald Trump for worrying that the election might be rigged? Scored?
How's it spelled?
S-C-O-R-E-D. That's an interesting usage of that word.
I don't know if that's actually the right usage.
I'm not sure.
They probably know more than we do. I don't know.
I'll assume. I know what they mean. It says, well, now that he's won, the same crowd is demanding recounts in three battleground states on grounds that the Russians rigged the results. Those Russians.
That's always the Russians.
Always getting in the way.
I thought they were pretty friendly toward the Russians until they had an idea that Mr. Trump might be involved with them.
They thought they gave them the reset button. They actually just gave them the recount button.
The left was they were just downright hospitable toward Russia until recently. Like whenever they thought Mr. Trump was in cahoots, now they hate Russia apparently.
Yeah. Everybody remembers the hot mic episode. Yeah, wait till I get back into office and I'll have more room to...
Everything they say contradicts itself. Like, it doesn't take long for them to say something exactly the opposite of something they just said, like with the recount.
Right.
Oh, yeah. How could you defy the democratic process by saying that the vote could be rigged? Now the vote's rigged.
Right.
It has to be rigged. He won. There's no way.
So, they are talking about doing a recount in these states. This is on Saturday. What's left of the Clinton campaign said it will join the recount effort demanded by Green Party candidate Jill Stein in Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. I saw where Wisconsin said, yeah, we'll recount it, but give us payment up front. We're not going to do it for free. The conspiracy theory, for which they have no evidence, is that Russian hackers rigged voting machines to manipulate the results. The Obama administration has said it detected no such hacking and that the elections were free and fair from a cybersecurity perspective. So even they said that. They still want the recount. They say Mr. Trump leads in 30 states, and he currently has 306 electoral votes. He would have to lose all three contested states to lose the election. He leads in Pennsylvania by about 71,000 votes, a little more than 20,000 in Wisconsin, and by nearly 11,000 in Michigan. And then the Wall Street Journal says, if you think U.S. politics is polarized now, try handing the White House to Hillary Clinton at this point. Can you imagine that?
Yeah. That's crazy.
So my feeling is nothing will come of this, and it's just, I don't know why they're even bothering, but I guess they're going to try to go ahead with the recount.
The funny thing is Jill Stein finished in, I believe, fourth place for the presidency, and it wasn't even close to the top two candidates, obviously. And now she's recounting to get someone else elected, not even herself. And she raised $5 million to do it. She said it's going to take a couple million to pay for the recounts in these several states. And then she's raising $2 or $3 million for attorney's fees. I saw someone do the math for that. If you had 10 attorneys doing all of the work on this case here, they'd have to each work like 700 hours on the case for it to cost that much money.
Yeah.
And yet that's how much money she raised. It seems like she's just kind of pocketing some money off of her clueless supporters.
Well, I was thinking I could use, a little part-time work. I'm like, yeah, $1 million bucks? Yeah, I'll recount them by myself. It'd take a while. I don't get, you can watch me. I'll just put them in piles, like one for you, one for you.
She just raised way more money than was necessary.
That's more money.
And claimed it was necessary.
It's more money than she had for her campaign, I think.
Yeah. She's like, I'm just going to cash in this $5 million here.
Yeah, that would be the thing, to take the money and then say, it looks legitimate. Well, nothing to see here, folks. And then she buys a new house on an island.
It just seems like a huge scam. I don't know why everyone seems to be falling for that.
Yeah, it seems like it hasn't gotten a lot of traction, but I don't know. I guess they're going to go ahead with it. We'll see.
See the use for math? If people would have taken the time to try and figure out why it would cost $3 million for attorney's fees, they could have understood that this is a big scam.
You would think with as much as attorneys supposedly make, they would get better commercials. You ever see the local attorneys commercials? I don't care where you live. It's just like they have this like dead vacant stare into the camera for too long, and the lighting is all bad, and they say stuff like, trust me, I'll get you, and you're like, I wouldn't trust you to take up the trash. You look terrifying to me.
Yeah, and the production value is really low. It looks like the video was shot in the 90s or something.
You could shoot a better video on your phone. Yeah. Just to do a little selfie style. That'd be even better.
They want to have that big salary, so they can't spend too much on advertising.
I've thought about those commercials a lot. Because I always think, is it bad on purpose so you remember it? And so you go, wow, that was really bad. Mm-hmm. Or are they just don't know what they're doing. Like, I don't understand it.
Right. Yeah. It seems like all the ads are even in poor taste sometimes. There's that billboard on the highway. Have you seen that? It says, like, until it's legal, and it has that gigantic picture of a cannabis leaf.
Oh.
And it's like, just call me until it's legal if you get in any trouble with marijuana. Well, how about you just stop doing marijuana instead of trying to get off the hook when you do it?
Well, what's he gonna say about it? You know, if it's illegal, it's illegal. Well, interesting.
I think people, a lot of millennials here are trying really hard to get marijuana legalized in Oklahoma. We have too many older, wiser people who are preventing that from happening.
They did a pretty funny parody about the law changing where they saw, like, it was all these people and they saw that the law had changed. Like, you could, I think it was like in New York or wherever they were doing it. And they said you could carry, you know, you could have marijuana. And they were all like, oh, it's like all these people that hadn't left their house in like years because they've been hiding and they're smoking marijuana. They came out into the street and they were all united and everything. And then the police comes up. He's like, well, you can have it, but you can't smoke it. And then
one guy tries to light it. Yeah. And they're like, whoa, 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 what are you doing?
And they all go back into their darkened dungeons. I got to wait till next time.
And they're all eating like Cheetos and stuff in there.
All the stereotypes.
Yeah.
Yep. Kind of a funny take on that, I guess. You ever been up to the Smoky Mountains in Tennessee?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't think I have either. But they're having fire problems out there. It says that the Great Smoky Mountains burn. Terrified guests are trapped inside a burning Hilton Hotel as huge wildfire engulfs Tennessee Resort and threatens Dollywood. While thousands evacuate and escaping cars burst into flames driving through the fire. They've got some video on it. You can see the link off of Drudge Report. And people are inside the hotel, and there's fire all around. And so the last report was they still have to just kind of wait, and they're hoping that they can't leave. I think they feel like they'll be safe, but they are trapped there for now. Dollywood, that resort up there, has been evacuated, and tourists are fleeing the area as wildfires rip through eastern Tennessee. The Gatlinburg Fire Department ordered the mandatory evacuation of the town as high winds fan the fire, and they have some video there of that Hilton Hotel with flames all just outside the windows. That'd be terrifying. Witnesses report that dozens of people are still trapped inside the hotel, which is surrounded by flames. And one of the guests said that the 16-story building began filling with smoke as the fire came up. Firefighters have told them to stay put. It's just too dangerous to evacuate. There's 80-mile-per-hour winds.
Oh, that's what always makes those fires spread so fast.
Yeah. There's at least 30 buildings which are been set ablaze so far. It's also come near the edge of Dollywood. Residents also reported cars bursting into flames on the road. It's a bad deal. Ooh. You think we can make it through that fire? Let's try it. Nope.
Let's try it with a car that has an engine full of gasoline.
Full of gas. But I guess you panic and you got to do something. Cabins exploding as they catch a light, they say. Voluntary evacuations began Monday afternoon, but by 6 p.m. a mandatory order had been issued, so everybody has to get out of that area. And so fires raging out there in Tennessee.
Yeah. I'm always baffled by how firefighters are able to control a fire. It's a really impressive feet when they can do something like that, because it seems like spraying a powerful hose at the base of a fire when it's that big, it would be pretty hard to really keep it in one place.
Yeah, they do a great job. I mean, we've seen some pretty big wildfires here in Oklahoma over the last several years, and you know, it's raging and they have the footage from the helicopters and you think, wow, no, this will never stop. And then the firefighter chief is always calm. He's like, yeah, we'll have it knocked out in about 45 minutes. I'm like, how are you going to do that? And they do every time, so good for them.
Hey, maybe they just spend their day working out on call until the fire's there, and then they're just like superheroes out on the scene.
They're ready to go. One of the dangers, of course, is just the heat, the dehydration.
Yeah.
Carrying around all that gear, so, and especially if it's in the summer. Yeah, it gets so hot in certain areas, but it's a great job that they do, so and a good service to the community, so that hopefully they can get that under control in Tennessee there. I've never been to nor had any thought to go to Dollywood, but I guess hopefully that survives.
What is that exactly?
Isn't that Dolly Parton's like her amusement deal?
Probably is.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
She they said there's a lot of animals in an aquarium up there as well. There's a lot of touristy things, and it's all kind of being threatened. So I think it's a takeoff on Hollywood, yeah. Dollywood.
I like that area of the country, though. A lot of woods, a lot of hills.
Yeah.
A lot of nice country people.
Yeah. So it's they're having their issue with fire, so hopefully they get that under control. So, of course, this one's happening here from the Dallas News. We've talked about Twitter trolls before. You've had some good stories on that. It can get you in trouble. A Twitter troll goes to jail.
Oh, wow.
His name is Babak Tazerde. It's an interesting name. I hope he didn't hear me. He'll be trolling me after this. He's a troll, they say. One of his Twitter personas boasts the bio, "I'm smarter than you unless you are really smart." So the guy's got like 10 different accounts, and he's got all these online personalities. He's like a split personality guy. And he claims that he has a different sense of humor, and he peppers his tweets with, of course, inappropriate language. And when he's online, he plays a character, he says. It's not who he really is, but he goes into this sort of alternate personality. But the character has gotten him into trouble. He's in the Dallas County Jail, and he's been there since June, held on a felony stalking charge.
Oh, wow.
He is accused of using social media to harass a judge who oversaw a criminal case against him. Before his arrest, he regularly commented online on political issues and public figures. He believes he is exercising his rights to free speech and to petition the government, but they say he's taken it too far because he's been threatening physical harm. And so the issue, I guess, becomes kind of the old thing that kids do. I was just kidding. You know, you shouldn't have done that. But I was just kidding, though. So that's what he's saying. Well, I'm just kidding. And they're saying, yeah, but you kind of threatened to kill people. And he's like, I'm just kidding, though.
A lot of people follow through on those exact same threats. You can't just... I kind of understand now why he might have been imprisoned. I thought at first that it was just him being a conservative, which is a problem too.
No, he's... and his favorite target is Judge Brandon Birmingham. Because they say... Well, it says that judge is in fear for his life and the life of his family because of the messages on social media posts. And... So the court records show the 46-year-old man used at least 10 Twitter accounts to stalk Birmingham and the judge's family. The judge presides over the 292nd District Court in Dallas County, and he oversaw a harassment case against this Twitter troll. And he didn't like the way the case went. So he claims that he felt the judge had mishandled the case, and he took to Twitter to express his frustration. He tweeted on June 8th, "Want to see me slap a state district judge? I am not one to trifle with." And it was a little saltier than that. I cleaned it up for the audience.
Good.
And so they say, look, trolling becomes a punishable offense once it is deemed a credible threat. And so people say a lot of things online, and sometimes it's funny, and sometimes it's a little salty. Mm-hmm. But if it's deemed a credible threat, then you can go to jail like this guy.
Right. Calling someone a moron, maybe you won't get in prison for it. Saying you'll burn their house down, that's kind of crossing the line. He should have told the police, though, it's my character doing this. It wasn't me. You have to arrest my character wherever he is online.
Put him in Twitter jail. Well, you know, he served a little bit of time, and then he got out, and he went right back to it. Like, he couldn't stop. And he was doing it through email. Like, somebody owed him some money or something. He kept emailing him every day and threatening him, and... The guy's addicted to it, and
wow,
it is weird. I do wonder if the psychologists out there are going, "Ha! I bet I could make a little money here if I could become an expert witness and say that it is like a multiple personality issue." You know, like you say, well, it's my character. They've got a mental issue. They can't go to jail. You just need to monitor them or whatever.
Yeah, I can see trolling being pretty addictive. I haven't gotten seriously into it, but I've said comments online meant to kind of niggle at someone I didn't agree with, and it's not like I do it all day, but you could see why people might find some sort of a thrill from it, especially if their real lives are not great and they get a lot of satisfaction from it.
That's always the back and forth on the argument. Somebody will say something against somebody else, and they'll be like, say it to my face, you know, and then, or they'll be like, big talk from your mom's basement. You know, it's always the same back and forth. So I don't get into it, but I do read it sometimes,
yeah.
Especially if it's like on a sports opinion or something. Some people have some pretty interesting takes.
Yeah, it can be pretty interesting. A lot of people have some outrageous takes, and that's when I just will write a one-sentence response, say, this is why you're wrong, and then that's all I'll say. And then they'll be responding like 10 times to me, and I'm like, that's all I want to say. I'm done talking now.
It is interesting.
I wasn't trying to ruin your life. I just wanted to show you why you were wrong.
It'd be interesting to see how much time people spend on that, some people. But yeah. For this guy, yeah, he took it too far. So always be careful when you're doing that, because if it's deemed a threat. And that gets interesting because a person could say something and say, well, I don't think it's a threat, but the other person does. I mean, it would get to be interesting, and that's kind of the argument and the battle they're having in these court cases. What's an actual threat?
Yeah, and that's why you have to kind of keep the language civilized, at least. You know, don't resort to name-calling. Don't resort to extremely angry, all-caps messages, because it's easy to perceive something like that as a threat, especially if you're more vulnerable than the person making the threat.
Right. And make sure you understand what all the little... whatever they call those things, abbreviations, what they mean.
Right.
Sometimes people put them in and you're like, I don't think that means that. Like there was one person I know that used to use LOL for lots of love instead of laugh out loud. And I remember they sent a message and it was like kind of a serious issue. And then at the end they put LOL. And I was like, what? Why is that funny?
Because that comes across as trolling.
Yeah.
If you don't know what it means and use it.
So make sure you know what those mean. Or just be like me and just bury your head in the sand and forget about all of it.
It's amazing how strict a lot of websites have become on trolling. Like, I've seen some articles where the analysis is poor. There are no facts. There's no logical sequence of writing. And then they block the comment section because they know they're going to get like 5,000 comments destroying every bit of the article.
Yeah.
If you're going to write something like that, expose yourself to the backlash. You know, that's kind of what you deal with. If you're going to put something out there, you should be open to criticism as well.
A lot of websites I've noticed have done that. Yeah. They don't no comment section anymore because there's probably no value in it.
And it's every article where I say, oh, I can't wait to see the comment section of this one. Those are the ones where they don't have any comment section.
Every opinion piece on CNN's website.
Yeah.
Every single one. The Trump Daily Radio Show is coming up along with the Key of David program today. And on the Trump Daily Radio Show with your host, Stephen Fleury from Edstone, England, he talks about a recent trip that he took to one of the museums there locally. And it really highlights the decline of UK manufacturing and just the decline of the blessings in the UK overall. And that really highlights what is written about in the United States and Britain in Prophecy, written by Herbert W. Armstrong. So pretty interesting take there, being over there. Looking at how the UK has slipped in the world in terms of their power and economically as well. And so interesting program today. And it gets into, again, the United States and Britain in Prophecy. And, you know, that book was written quite a while ago. And you can look and see what's happened to the UK and the US in a lot of ways. And if you hold it up to that book and, of course, the Bible, you have to say that things are trending that way, the way that it said it would go.
Yeah, actually, I was there in the UK about a year and a half ago, and I could definitely tell that things are going downhill. A lot of people walking around, they just seemed nervous because there's just, you know, even London, for example, is millions of Muslims there now, and there is a lot of fear going around about things like that. And I've even just seen a lot of the morality levels slip. I went to a restaurant, and the first thing the guy asked me, like, what kind of beer you want? Are you looking to get hammered? And I'm like, why would that be your first question? Like, that's, I guess maybe everyone who goes there is looking for something like that.
I was in Las Vegas years ago with my wife. We were there for a business. It was a convention, but they put a lot of them in Vegas. And so we were walking down the strip one night, and people are always there trying to give you inappropriate materials. And the guy says to us, are you married or are you happy? we just kept walking. I thought, come on, man.
Both.
Yeah, both. What's wrong with that? But it's same sort of thing where it's like, hey, we're all here to sin, right? Mm-hmm. Let's get to it. But
well, yeah, I mean, the cards they pass out there are shocking. I was there when I was pretty young, and they're just throwing these cards on the street.
Yeah.
I guess they're escort cards.
Yeah.
Because it's legal there. So
yeah, going to the restrooms, they're all sitting there. They put them on the the thing. Yeah, they're everywhere. They're good at it. They'll snap them together to get your attention. Like put them in your chest. Like they won't touch you, but they're gonna put them as close to you as possible, and they try to get your attention. And they always hire people to do that, and that's kind of one of the, at least when I was out there, they did that. So it's just crazy. It follows you around.
Yeah.
Like, you have to make an effort to stay away from it because it's so in your face with a lot of the stuff there.
Yeah, the moral decline is shocking here and over there. Both places, we just kind of are proud of it. It's not where people were ashamed of those types of sins. Now it's out in the open.
You know, I think it would be a fun game show to start where you have somebody get on a plane and they don't know where they're going, and based upon the people on the plane, they have to guess where the destination is.
Oh, yeah.
Because I got on a plane to go to Vegas, and I was like, oh, yeah, we're going to Vegas.
Really?
Like, I knew because I knew, first of all. But also, the people that were on there, like, you could tell they were either heading to have a really good time or, in their thinking, I suppose. Or in the women in particular, the way they were dressed, it just looked like, where are we going now? It's like the party bus. It was the party plane. And so that'd be an interesting show to see if you could guess where you're heading.
Yeah, and even Americans in general are pretty distinct when it comes to most countries. Not always in a bad way, but, I mean, if anyone's going to be wearing pajamas on a flight, it's going to be an American, I would think.
Yes.
I see it all the time.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. Yeah, it's always funny to see. Well, you know, another thing, it's like when people get off of international flights and they've been on the plane for a long time, they just have a certain look to them. They're kind of like zombies. And I equate it to two things. Getting off of like a roller coaster, people have kind of that look to them like, what just happened? And also, this is kind of a weird analogy, but I think it works. When my son, when he was really young, he had to have an operation. And so we were waiting in the room where they brought him back from that. And there was other people they were bringing back. There was all kids, you know. It was at a children's hospital. And so they're bringing the kids back in from these operations, and they're just coming to, and the parents are there to kind of, you know, take care of them. And they all have that same look, like, what just happened? Like, they just got off a roller coaster or an international flight. Those three things all look the same. Post-operation, getting off an international flight, roller coaster.
That's true.
Everyone
That's
has so that true. Look like, are we still alive? Like, what just happened? So the operation, the post-op's a little morbid, I apologize, but it had the same look to it.
Exactly.
So three things in life that look the same. It's an IQ test. Which one of these is not? You've got an interesting story here for us, Grant. This is from LifeSet. Anti-conservative bias still hot trend with social media moguls. It says Reddit becomes latest major social outlet caught guilty suppressing right of center voices.
This is it's somewhat humorous, but also somewhat sobering, this story. It came out recently that the Reddit CEO was censoring certain comments from Reddit users, specifically pro-Trump Reddit users who criticized him by name. He actually removed his name from the comments and put the name of other moderators of the website in there. So talk about throwing your employees under the bus. He didn't want to be criticized directly, so he put the names of his own employees in place of his own name.
Thanks. I hope there's a nice bonus at the end of the year for that. Thanks for throwing me under the bus.
Apparently a lot of his employees weren't too thrilled with him, but he got caught for it. And this was on the Donald subreddit, obviously a pro-Trump subreddit. And they were trying to censor and even remove certain subreddits or certain subsections about different topics, including this Pizzagate scandal, which is pretty revolting. But I don't want to get into that too much. But basically, on a website, you should be able to freely discuss ideas and not have them removed.
Well, that's why people go to Reddit. That's why they're a business, I guess, and why people use them, because they want to exchange ideas. And of course, you can find Reddit discussions about anything, you know, people's favorite cooking pan. It could be anything, and there's always comments on it, particularly tech or sci-fi, it seems like, that type of thing. But yeah, again, you can't sit there and try to be this information gatekeeper, and that's what they're trying to do. Mm-hmm. Like, anybody's free to say anything as long as it's what we want you to say.
Right, and the subreddits they removed are all basically conservatives trying to discuss different ideas. I've seen a lot more disgusting things on Reddit, or more inappropriate things to talk about on Reddit that are not being banned, and yet these specific things are. Reddit also had another problem where they specifically altered their algorithm so that certain topics from this the Donald subreddit didn't go to the front page of their website. They didn't want the majority of website visitors to see anything that was pro-Trump on the front page.
Yeah, it's just really, it is shocking in a way. I mean, they talk about free speech, and you are supposed to be able to give a differing view. And we've talked about this before, and I think you've brought this point out, but if you are sure in your stance and you think it's right, I don't know why you wouldn't be happy to discuss it. Mm-hmm. I mean, if it's just arguing, okay, I get that. Nobody wants to do that usually, but if you think, okay, my candidate's the better candidate, why wouldn't you want to discuss it?
Yeah.
If you have to absolutely shut down the other side, I would think you're not that secure in your candidate.
Right. Why would Hillary Clinton need to hire millions of online trolls to push her messages? Why would these different websites need to censor things that are pro the other candidate? It just is, it's almost Orwellian in a way, talking about that that book that basically was all about censorship. And this is basically what's happening. It's happened on Facebook as well. They found out recently that human curators decided what were trending topics on Facebook. So it wasn't the ones that people were necessarily clicking on and reading the most. It was what these select few people deemed to be the most important topics. And one of those people actually specifically admitted to suppressing conservative items from the trending list on Facebook.
Yeah, and it's interesting in light of that. Drudge, of course, you know, excited about their own stats because they're good and they're pumping them out there. But they had their highest month, I think, of views in like 20 years. It was like 1.2 billion.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I know people that don't like the conservative viewpoint or what would be considered more conservative, they do really target Fox, they target Drudge, and they're just kind of beside themselves at how successful they are. But they're successful because there's not a lot of places you can go to kind of get maybe both sides, mm-hmm. maybe. Now, and Drudge would probably lean a lot more to the conservative side. But if you're going to places like Reddit or you're going to Facebook and you know that you're being censored, you're going to go somewhere else. Mm-hmm. They're going to hurt their own business at the end, I think.
Yeah, they really are. So Reddit and Facebook are both already doing this. But at least in both of these cases, they tried to pretend like they were correcting their course and apologizing for censoring conservatives. Obviously, the Reddit CEO came forward and admitted that he was editing some of these comments, and they also admitted that their algorithm was suppressing pro-Donald Trump things from the top of their site. Facebook actually fired this group of human curators that were manipulating the trending topics on their website, but Twitter has not really made any apology. They banned Milo Yiannopoulos, who's actually a pretty controversial yeah. alt-right or conservative commentator, because a lot of his own followers started tweeting insults at this actress that he criticized. So he wasn't the one tweeting all of the criticism that got him banned. His followers were, and therefore somehow he was responsible for what his own followers were saying.
Well, you know, and in the height of the media frenzy against Donald Trump, some big time, well, I don't know if they're big time, but they're celebrities, said some pretty vicious things. De Niro, you remember him saying he wanted to punch Donald Trump in the face?
Right.
Well, isn't that a threat of violence? That'll get some people put in jail. How about him? You know, and so they're happy to say their things and be extremely crass and be extremely threatening on the left. But then when the right gets anywhere near it, oh, you got to shut them down.
Right.
So obviously the censorship is pretty obvious.
Yeah, it's definitely one-sided. It's directed toward people on the right. For example, Twitter, after the election, purged most of their popular conservative accounts, basically in retribution for Mr. Trump winning the election. So you might have thought that having Republicans control all three or the two houses of Congress and then also the presidency would have made people more open to those views, or at least more accepting of those views, since they're clearly the majority now. But no, people are still going all out to censor, and it looks like it's only going to get worse from the progressives censoring every voice that they don't agree with.
But, you know, the thing about it is again, they do close down their business from growth, but it also reveals that a lot of people don't care what they do. They're not as powerful as they think they are because, you know, Donald Trump still won, even though Reddit did everything in their power, you know, and Facebook. A lot of people don't care about that. It's just an entertainment thing. I mean, that's all it is. There might be some relevant information from time to time, but it's entertainment. Mm-hmm. And they take themselves so seriously, like they can manipulate everything in the world. And at the end of the day, they could be gone tomorrow and no one would care. Mm-hmm. There'd be a new tech thing pop up. Yeah, I mean, stuff happens. MySpace, right? Whatever happened to that? You know, things do go away. And so I think they think they've got their finger on the pulse of everything, but it turns out they don't.
Yeah, they probably were led astray by the fact that more of the vocal voices, more of the outspoken people are on the left. And so they probably wrongly thought they were in the vast majority of people when there is actually what they call a silent majority in this country that doesn't agree with it. And they will silently boycott everything that you do if you're going to discriminate against them. That's why the NFL ratings have gone down so much, because everyone who is in favor of the national anthem and showing respect for that is getting sick of all the political things going on in sports. And it's just happening in a lot of different areas. You know, a lot of the Trump voters did not admit to being Trump voters to the pollsters, but they silently showed up and they voted and they went home. So there are a lot of conservatives in this country, especially throughout the vast expanses in the middle of this country. And maybe these businesses should just stop trying to be political. They're hastening their own demise. There are alternatives to Twitter and to Facebook and to Reddit. And they're only going to get more popular as these people just keep foolishly trying to censor everybody.
Yeah. They should have a slogan. You read it here first. They can use that if they want to. LifeSet, you can read the rest of that. Anti-conservative bias, still hot trend with social media moguls. Pretty interesting write-up. That'll do it for us today on Trumpet Radio Live. Make sure you listen for the Key of David program and the Trumpet Daily Radio Show coming your way later today. You're listening to 101.3 KPCG, and we're online at kpcg.fm. Have a great rest of your day. For myself, Dwight Falk, and Grant Turgeon, we will see you back here tomorrow.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG.